And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Hey, we got a great program for you today. Got a guest. He's got a wonderful website and a radio program of his own. And I was very fortunate to be a guest of this gentleman last week, I suppose. He's out of Portland, Oregon, and his radio program is called Ground Zero. His website is, and you might want to get a pencil and write this down. I think you're going to want to. You'll enjoy it. He has a lot of things that he writes on it, all kinds of things about conspiracy, things maybe you never even thought about, but you'll enjoy reading about, because I did. And I think if you listen to Power Prophecy, well, you'll want to listen maybe and see what Clyde is talking about sometime as well. Clyde Lewis is his name. And as I said, he's out of Portland, Oregon. Beautiful city. I've been there several times. I was very privileged to be on the CBS affiliate there. And, man, I just love the weather, for one thing. Although I did, they put me up in a hotel downtown, and it was 101 degree that day. That must be unusual in Portland, but boy, were we roasting. They hadn't turned on the air conditioning yet at the hotel downtown. Oh, I had a terrible experience in the midst of a beautiful city roasting. You don't want to do that, but I got to love the people of Portland, Oregon. Gorgeous place. Well, anyway, Clyde Lewis has written a book. He's written many things, but one of the things I like is a book he's got, and I'm going to ask Clyde to tell you how to get the book, how you can read it. It's not a real long book, but it's sort of, let's just call it, in-depth because of the subject matter. It's entitled Antichrist 2012, and the subtitle is really explanatory. It's all about Prince William. Will he be the Antichrist? Wow. Now, some people say to me, Tex, you shouldn't be pinning the tail on the donkey, you know, like the kids do. You shouldn't be trying to name the Antichrist. Well, I don't know why not. It's fun. And I think it can be very useful. In fact, in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, it says, before Jesus comes again, the Antichrist will be known to true Christians. Not to everyone, of course, in the world. They'll all probably admire him and think he's a great statesman and a wonderful leader. But the Bible says, in fact, Paul says, don't let anybody deceive you. That day, which is the coming of the Lord, will not arrive until the son of perdition is revealed. We're going to know who he is. Those of you who have, well, you have wisdom given you by God, you're going to be able to identify him. Now, probably no one will agree with you, and they'll all say, oh, you're crazy. It couldn't be him. But you're going to know if you're of God and you have the wisdom and understanding that God can give. So that makes it very interesting. And we should look then for the Antichrist, because we're going to know him. And when he is come into the world, only then will Jesus return again. That's why, you know, Clyde and I were talking, my guest there were talking about this Harold Camping of Family Radio Network, and how he said that May 21st, the world was going to end. Well, that was baloney. For one thing, the Antichrist, you know, had not been identified. On the other hand, well, maybe the Antichrist has been identified. You have to read Antichrist 2012 by Clyde Lewis, and maybe he's there. Hey, Clyde, welcome to Power of Prophecy.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Tex. Really, really a privilege to be on your program.
You know, I liked your book because it's easily read, but it's a little intellectual, too, because you discuss how the royal family you go back into the pagan religions. You talk about the god Saturn and Zeus and all of these, everything from the order of the Druids. Just a fascinating little book. How did you come to produce that book?
Well, I worked with Tracy Twyman, who is a well-known writer of esoteric things, and she was very, very impressed with my knowledge of the Bible and the way I drew parallels with the prophecies of Daniel and the book of Revelation. And we had seen a number of things that were blatantly shown, in the European Union as a development into taking biblical iconography and exploiting it for time ago about Prince William becoming the heir to the throne and becoming the king of the world, which is a another name for the Antichrist, the king who rules the world with an iron scepter, and it does it with not the righteousness of the people in mind, but for the righteousness, for the actually for the purpose of creating a new world order or a satanic order upon the planet, an ecumenical order of churches that will all come together to worship or to at least pay homage to this great king of the world that has been prophesied by Daniel and prophesied in, by John the Revelator. So we combine esoteric knowledge with biblical prophecy and combine it together and realize that the man who is going to be willed to be king, a prince, will come into the world and he'll come into the world and no one will really understand who he is and what power he has, but he does have power, and he does and he does look upon what we call the darker side of the force, and decides that he's going to be king of the world, and that's Prince William.
You know, everybody was just fascinated by this wedding of Prince William of the British royal family with Kate Middleton.
Yes.
And your book, and Ms. Twyman's, has a lot of parallels with the pagan mystery religions and the actual ceremony. And I'd really like to get into some of those in just a little bit, the parallels that you explain very, very carefully. And it takes us all the way back to ancient Babylon and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But first I'd like to ask you about the royal family itself, because I know a lot of people out there are saying, well, I had no idea. I thought they were just your average people. Okay, but they're of royal bloodline. But evidently there's long been a sorcery and occult New Age connection with the British royal family. Is that correct?
Yeah, the royal family, I mean, a lot of people don't understand why the royals are royals. In fact, they don't even contemplate the blasphemy that is the royal family. The royal family are heretical blasphemy to the Church of God. The reason why is because they claim that they have the blood of Christ flowing through their veins, that they are the Jesus Christ on earth. They do so because of a number of reasons. One, they've taken that position and claim and have had genealogists trace their blood all the way back to King David, and of course the bloodline of Judah, the bloodline of Christ, and they pretend to be Jews, they pretend to be the synagogue of Israel, when in reality they're not. They are forfeit. They don't have the bloodline of Christ in them. In fact, they even say that it's through the Priory of Sion that they have claimed that they have taken this royal bloodline because Jesus Christ did not die on the cross and he didn't atone for the sins of the world, but he was taken and he fathered children with Mary and Margaret. And that those children lived in Europe and that they became our kings and our royalty and that sort of thing. And so they are firm believers in the idea of ritual, the druidic rituals, the rituals of the cult of Diana, several satanic and druidic type of celebrations. And when you take a look at the royal wedding and how it was on the 29th, it was done on the 29th of April, and then after that, we celebrated Walpurgis, they celebrated Walpurgis, which is actually a druidic witch satanic holiday, which ends with Beltane on the 1st of May, where they do sacrifices and literally fertility orgies. It just seems to me that it was well-timed, well-planned, and it was to celebrate the king of the winter marrying the May Queen, which is an old ancient druidic ceremony where we have the earth and sky mate, and they create a sacrificial baby that is to be put on the altar. And so we look at that and we say, well, what is the purpose of this? It's to gain power from the darker side to allow Prince William to, you know, gain more power from the devil, gain more power from Satan to become the incarnated Antichrist. And it's obvious to me this is happening.
April the 29th. The eve of Walpurgis, this occult day, that they actually did choose April 29th, didn't they? That was the day they chose. That had, you know, that's strange. The high holy day of the Satanists, the eve of Beltane or May Day. Well, that was the same day Osama bin Laden was sacrificed, you might say, right?
Exactly. It was the same day they announced that Adolf Hitler had died. It's the same, it's also the day that, well, April 29th is the day that, Eva Braun and Hitler were buried in the Reichstag and committed suicide, and then it was announced by the Russians that Hitler had died on May 1st, that he was dead on May 1st, Osama bin Laden dead on May 1st. Osama bin Laden was literally a sacrifice for the gods that they worship, that our leaders worship, and our leaders don't have the morals we do. They worship gods that we don't. They practice in rituals that we do not even want to come near. And these rituals are made for power and to actually keep people in a trance so they don't see the evil and the darkness that they're putting upon the planet. And if you take a look at everything that has been happening since the royal wedding, anything from Osama bin Laden's death, and we had discussed that they had propped Osama bin Laden up as the Dajjal, which I thought was very fascinating. That the eye was, they said the eye was shot out. The imagery of the one-eyed liar and fraud was being projected to the American people.
And the Dajjal is the Muslim Antichrist in the Quran.
Exactly, the Muslim Antichrist in the Quran.
So they were portraying then, or they were trying to portray, I mean, probably just totally hoaxed, Osama bin Laden. They were really telling the Islamic world that we have killed Osama bin Laden, who was the Antichrist. He was shot through the left eye, because they actually preach, don't they, in the Muslim religion, that their Antichrist, the Dajjal, will be a man who has just one eye, because he will have suffered an injury in his left eye.
So they did that purposefully to send that message to Islam, that their Antichrist has been killed. And then that prompts people like Mahmoud Ahmadinejad to say that on June 5th, the Mahdi will return. Mm. And during that same period, we have Harold Camping, who said that Judgment Day was going to be on the 21st. And so what I'm seeing here is I'm seeing this drill, this preparation for the announcement or for the Judgment Day. I call the Judgment Day apocalyptic psyop, where what they're doing is they're preparing us for this, and it is a false rapture. It's a false Judgment Day. It's because they want to see the reaction of the people when we do install, or when governments do install, the new ruler, the king of the world, and when we start seeing churches, which I predict probably by the end of September will fall into a schism. And when they do, you will notice that schism will divide the religious groups, and when it does, there will be a corporatized ecumenical brotherhood established, which then they will say, we do have a royal leader amongst us, and that royal leader is Prince William, and he will stand in the place where the king of the world will be crowned, and he will get the throne at that time.
You know, Clyde, it's very, very sad that you would propose that might happen, and I don't doubt it at all, because I really want to estimate. I don't have any, you know, computerized calculations by any means, because it's very hard to judge every man's heart from our human perspective. But certainly as I look about and I see churches throughout the United States, Christian churches throughout the world, you see very few pastors and church leaders today that truly worship Jesus Christ. And it brings to mind what Jesus Christ himself said. He said, when the Son of Man returns, will he even find faith on planet Earth? You know, in another place, Jesus said, if it were of the events of the last days and the great deception and the lie, he said, if it were possible, even the very elect would be deceived. So that those are two stunning statements by Jesus, talking about how few will worship the truth when he returns again.
The reason why they will be deceived is because we cannot as Christians allow our prejudices to determine who the Antichrist is. We can't allow our prejudices to determine how the apocalypse will go down, whether we be, you know, anti-Muslim, anti-Jewish, anti-Christian, or whatever we are. We have to look at it from the standpoint of what is it that will be the least likely to happen is probably the most likely to happen. And that is, we will see, and this is what I can predict, because I'm kind of an accidental prophet, if you will, that the churches will fall into a schism because of the corporatizing of evangelical churches in the country. We have nearly 700 evangelical churches that are corporatized, that are there for profit more so than spirituality. They allow what I call religious science fiction to creep into the masses with making the rapture like a science fiction film. So we see that aspect taking over, and then we have it all mixed together in one big mess. The Pope of the Catholic Catholic Church will either step down or will die, and they will elect a Jesuit pope, and they will declare war on Satan, and it will be because they will create this fake war against Satan or this fake war against whatever's out there. They've already accepted the idea that there are aliens coming for us. They've already said, look, we're searching for the aliens. We're searching for these beings that, you know, that are out there.
You're talking about the Roman Catholic Church, the Vatican.
Church. Yeah, and they use, I don't know if you know this, they use a telescope in Arizona to look for these creatures or whatever, and that telescope is called Lucifer. And they're using Lucifer to seek out in the heavens these creatures. And so I'm thinking that it's a reality that they are waiting to reveal to the people, and when they do, the Antichrist would also come forward, and he would make peace with these beings. And it's like it says that the Antichrist will worship gods that are unknown to his fathers, or alien gods. And I think that we're coming close to that time.
You know, you just in the last 3 minutes there, you said you've revealed some secrets that I doubt if very few people in the whole world know about. For example, that telescope, the project and telescope called Lucifer, that's run by the Vatican, where they're constantly scanning the skies. So they're spending many, probably tens of millions of dollars watching the skies fervently, waiting for this sign in the heavens or for the arrival of the, beings from outer space or maybe inner space. That's another story. But, you know, that's also run by the Jesuit order, I understand. So there we get into the secret societies of the Vatican. But,
right, we all know that the Society of Christ they're the heavy mobsters of the church. And they're the ones that will declare war. They're the generals, and they are the army, actually, of the church. So when the church is given carte blanche to declare war on Satan because they have the secret of what's out there, in the darkness, then it will run rampant. There'll be covenants made between churches to create an ecumenical church, and they will say that you need to be a part of this group because we're the only ones who have the secrets to combat the evil that is coming for us from the skies. And it just seems to me that it's becoming more and more evident. I mean, why would they call it Lucifer? They say it's an acronym for large binocular telescope near infrared utility with camera and integral field. That's what it stands for. And then they say, well, let's call it Lucifer for short. And then you've got CERN, which is there in Switzerland, it's trying to open up dimensions and find the God particle.
Mm-hmm.
Or open up dimensions to try and find God. And they use something called a Satan, which is a telescopic array that creates a positron to try and open up that doorway to speak with beings, or to at least open up some sort of an Einstein vortex that they want to open up to try and bring these beings over. So you'll have...
Yeah, sort of a stargate. Yeah.
Yeah. You'll have in the future a king that will be the king of the world, who will pay homage to gods that are not known of his fathers, that are alien gods, that they will team up with all the other churches and governments to form this great union. And the union, I believe, will be in Europe. It will be in the new Rome. It will be in London. And the new Rome, of course, is Babylon or Babylondon, which is where they're going to have this great king. And I believe it's going to be Prince William.
You know, David Icke, the British writer, very interesting guy. I realize he's not a Christian, and you need to be a little bit leery of that. But the guy's quite a brilliant guy in many respects. Now, he believes that the British royal family, as you know, Clyde, and you mentioned this in your book, Antichrist 2012, that the British royal family are reptilians.
Yes.
You know, they're sort of like, the recent TV series V.
Right.
And secretly, you know, rip off the skin, and they look like, you know, horrible-looking reptiles or dragon-like people. But it is sort of interesting. The Bible calls Satan that old, you know, dragon, or that old serpent, the dragon,
right,
and talks about the red dragon. Now, in your book, the interesting thing is you show the flag of Wales, the coat of arms of the Prince of Wales, which is now Prince William, who's, slated to become the next king, evidently. And boy, what some very interesting symbols on that. Tell us a little bit about some of those symbols. There's even a red dragon, isn't there, on the Prince of Wales coat of arms?
Yeah, the dragon itself, if you take a look at, for example, if you go into the working district of London, they have dragons everywhere on podiums in the middle of the city. There are dragons in the coat of arms of Prince William and Prince Charles. There's also the dragon, the great dragon of Wales on the flag of Wales. And it does say in the Book of Revelation that there will be a sign of a woman with the sun on her face and the moon at her feet. And of course, if you take a look at that and say, okay, well, who's the great woman who has the sun or the face of God or the godlike face and the moon at her feet, who stands on the moon? That would be Isis. That would be Diana. Diana wears a crown, or the scripture says that she will have a crown with the 12 stars on it. If you take a look at the European Union flag, there are 12 stars. There's the corona of Mother Mary with the corona of the 12 stars as well. You're looking at the counterfeit Mary, the counterfeit carrier of the new Antichrist, which comes down, and then the dragon rises up and devours the child in front of the mother. Now, devouring could mean one of two things. One, he eats the child, which he doesn't do, but he, like Cronos or Saturn, takes the child and rears him in the ways of his dark realm. So Charles, the Prince of Wales, the symbol of the dragon, rises up, takes the child, and then he rears the child in the ways of government, the ways of politics. Mom, on the other hand, decides that she has to flee into the wilderness to find a place that God has prepared for her. So she flees to France, where she dies in a place called the Pont d'Alma Tunnel, which is an erected sacrificial site for the Priory of Sion, which was the Merovingian site.
Now, you're talking about what happened to Princess Diana.
She was killed there.
Yeah. Okay.
And so she was killed on a spot that was held sacred in France for the cult of Diana. The Merovingians had the Pont d'Alma area as the site, the sacrificial site, where they used to kill people. Diana was killed there at Pont d'Alma, which is the Bridge of Souls. And those who die there ascend into heaven immediately. And those who are the children or the family are erected as gods, and they are like walking Christ on the earth. And if you notice, in France, where Princess Diana died, they erected a hand with a torch, which is similar to our Statue of Liberty, which is similar to Isis Mary, the image of Mary, the image of Diana, the image of the moon goddess. And so Diana is literally the great moon goddess, the woman who is the secret, who is buried between two pillars in the middle of the lake. And you've got Prince Charles and William, who are all Arthurian people. They believe in the Arthurian legends. So Princess Diana becomes the Lady of the Lake. Prince William changes his name to King Arthur, and he becomes the once and future king that was prophesied about in ancient mythologies of England, which is very creepy.
Now, this Arthurian court, you know, of King Arthur and his knights and the knights of the Round Table and all these things. So, you know, a lot of people think, well, that's just from movies and novels and so forth. But there is a real occult legend and meaning to this. And so these people are working to actually make it happen then.
King Arthur was literally the counterfeit Jesus. He's like the phoenix. I mean, because he said that he would die and then he would resurrect again to save his kingdom. He's not Christ. He's a king who thought himself a messiah. And so, if you look at Prince William's name, his name is Prince William Louis Philip Arthur Mountbatten, and he can take on any of those names as a regnal name. So if he becomes King Arthur, then what we'll be seeing a fulfillment of the king returning to save his people, to save the world, the once and future king, the king of the world, which he will be crowned. There's a hymn that's sung in British churches called Jerusalem, and it's based on a poem by William Blake called In Those Feet in Ancient Time. And the poem and the song is linked to an idea in the book of Revelation, which is Revelation chapter 3, verse 12 and 21:2, describing the second coming, where Jesus returns and establishes a new Jerusalem or Zion in England. And it also implies that Jesus visited Europe after the crucifixion, and that this has been the agenda for a long time, to convince people that Jesus never died on the cross, that the families that he created when he was in France and England live today, and they are our leaders. That is Antichrist in and of itself, because what that does is it destroys the atonement, it destroys the idea of the resurrection, and the whole saving ordinances of the church. There is no Christianity without the resurrection. There is no Christianity without the atonement. So it destroys Christianity in a scriptural and philosophical way to claim that you are a king that has the royal bloodline direct from Jesus.
Hmm. You know, I noticed on this, the red dragon and these other symbols on the coat of arms of the Prince of Wales, it also has a unicorn.
Yes.
And the unicorn is chained, and the chain evidently is held by the dragon.
Right.
And that's an interesting symbol in itself. You know, in the book of Psalms in the Bible, there is a prophecy of Jesus on the cross. Most people don't know this, in the Old Testament, where Jesus said that he is confronted by three enemies. There is the lion,
right,
the unicorn, and the dog.
Right.
Or he says, save my life, or my daring in the King James, from the dog. Now there is the lion, the British lion, and the unicorn are two of those symbols. There's a second lion, but his face does seem like a dog. But might this go back to the dog star of the ancient Egyptians? The six-pointed star really represents that dog star, or Sirius, the planet or star Sirius. Even the Masons look for the dog star, you know, to return. I wonder if that's part of that prophecy.
Well, that's where the false prophet comes in, and that's where the false prophet comes from Sirius, that the false prophet, the symbol that he wears is the hexagram, the symbol of Saturn, the symbol of the Jews, the symbol of Hindu, the powerful symbol of the hexagram. That's why they call it a hex, is because they would use that symbol to create a hex over the people, put them in a trance, and they would listen to the words of the sacerdote or the priest or the pontificator, who would mesmerize the people into accepting anything that was told to them, and he used the powerful talisman of the hexagram. And so we can associate it with a number of people. We can associate it with either the Jews, or we can associate it with Barack Obama, or we can associate it with a number of other people because of the way he's come into the world. And a lot of people believe that he is. In fact, when he was in Egypt, in Cairo, they were worshiping him as the new King Tut. They were saying that he was the new King Tut. Some people believe that he is the reincarnated Akhenaten. There's some interesting theories there, saying that he came to unite the people, to unite them to believe in one government, that one government will rule the world, and that he will prepare the way, kind of like the counterfeit John the Baptist, that he would actually be the counterfeit John the Baptist and prepare the way for the Antichrist.
Well, that may not be too far from the truth. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to go for a short break here. When we come back, boy, I've got a lot of questions. I want to talk about this god Saturn or Kronos, the groom's cake. That's a very strange thing that was at the royal wedding, the groom's cake. So much more. My guest is Clyde Lewis. We're talking about his book, Antichrist 2012. When we return, we're going to find out how to get the book and maybe some other products, some things interesting by Clyde Lewis. His website again is groundzeromedia.org. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment. I'm Tex Mars. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Well, Tex Mars back here again. My guest, Clyde Lewis, and we'll reintroduce him in just a minute. But right now, I want to tell you about my new book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. You know, some of the things that Clyde and I are discussing today, you'll find in the book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. Not a lot about Prince William, of course, but you will find out about Saturn, about the hexagram, about the Jewish six-pointed star that they mistakenly call the Star of David, and so much more. The subtitle, I think, is very explanatory. It's Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star, Eye-Opening Revelations, and Forbidden Knowledge About Israel, the Jews, Zionism, and the Rothschilds. And as some other of my books, it's a huge book. It's 432 pages, but it's, you know, about twice as big as a normal book. So it'd probably be equivalent to about 1,000 pages of just an average size book. I think you'll enjoy it. It's got a lot of pictures, a lot of information, a lot of documentation, and just an amazing book. And it's certainly based on many years of research. Most of the information is new. Some of it I've covered in what I would call the best of my newsletters, but much of it, especially about the hidden secrets of Judaism, are absolutely fresh and new. So I invite you to get the book Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. Of course, it's $29.95 in bookstores, but we ask $25 for the book. And as I've told you before, I don't receive any royalties on the book. Everything that we make, if anything, goes back into the ministry and allows us to continue our website, our ministry to overseas missions, to prisons, to the children's home here in Texas that so many of you are kind enough to give to. And, of course, we're able to pay the bills here and keep things going as Power of Prophecy is heard around the world on the American Voice Network, on our website, powerofprophecy.com, and on Worldwide Christian Radio, WWCR Shortwave, out of Nashville, Tennessee, but beamed across this planet. And you make all these things possible when you order anything from us, or you give us a love gift of or offering of any amount. And we are so appreciative of your help. Now, to get the book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star, $25. Please add $5 shipping and handling. Ask for the book, Star. Just say, hey, I want the Star book or the Star of David. We'll know. We got some very smart people working here. You know, I just have tap dance all the time just to keep up with them. They're so smart, good people, and they like to hear from you. We don't, you know, Jerry, we don't really have any cranky or acidic people here, do we? I mean, you know, everybody here's pretty nice. Oh, well, Jessica. Well, yeah, she may be a little cranky. Jessica's sitting in the studio too. Yeah, she may be a little cranky at times, sometimes. But we love her. She's a sweetheart, really. You'll enjoy. If you call us, you talk to Jessica, our ordering person, and she's the sweetest can be. You'll want to talk to her, especially if you're young, handsome, male, and no, I'm only kidding. Although she is single, but I get in trouble for saying that. Okay. All right. Now, don't you and old men call. She's young. She's only in her mid-20s or so. But if you meet that criteria and you're handsome and you're smart, well, who knows? Okay. Now, please, she's got work to do. Don't call her here and try to get into conversations with her. Send her a letter, okay? Then she can evaluate you. Now, our phone number is 1-800-234-9673 to order the book. 1-800-234-9673. Jessica's over there laughing. 1-800-234-9673. Of course, powerofprophecy.com. You'll find all about the book, and you're able to order it there with your charge card. But call us, and remember now, we'll always send you a free subscription to our monthly newsletter. You can read it, of course, online free, but we'll send it to you free, a printed copy every month. And you don't have to ask for it. We'll just, you know, with your order, we'll renew your subscription if you're already getting it, or give you an absolutely free initial subscription to our newsletter, Power Prophecy. A lot of interesting things in there. I think you will enjoy it. Let's see now. I need to give them my address, don't I? Yeah. Okay. To write for the book, $25 plus $5 shipping and handling, total of $30 postpaid. We will work hard to get it out for you. We know you're interested in the book. Just write to Power of Prophecy or to text Mars at 1708 Patterson Road, Patterson Road, Austin, Texas. That's the Republic of Texas, but don't write that down there. They won't understand. Austin, Texas, 78733. Now, let's return to our regular program. Clyde Lewis is my guest. I want to give you his website again because you'll want to get on that website, see what he's got to say there, groundzeromedia.org. I enjoy very much what he's talking about here, some of the things that he says. Very knowledgeable man. Glad to have him on the show today. He's author of a book. It's not a real big book, so it won't take you like all summer long to read it, but I think it'll be interesting to you. It's entitled Antichrist 2012, and it's, wow, a lot about the pagan mystery religions and the British royal family, and it asks the question, will Prince William be the prophesied Antichrist? Clyde Lewis, welcome back to Power of Prophecy.
Thank you.
You know, there's so much to this royal family. I understand there's a gentleman who wrote a book entitled The Prince and the Paranormal, talking about the occult proclivities of Prince Charles. And then they say that Fergie, who's not part of the royal family, I guess, officially, was into all kind of occult New Age things. And just recently, it came out that Prince Andrew visited this Jewish multimillionaire in Palm Beach, Florida, where he cavorted about with underage, you know, teenage girls. And one of them was even shipped by charter aircraft back to sea in Great Britain. So, you know, there might be a criminal offense there. I suspect it would be covered up. Now, back to the Antichrist thing. 2012, what a key year. So much is supposed to happen that year. Why do you have that in the title of your book, the year 2012?
Because as a counterfeit Christ, Prince William will turn 30 years old, and he will serve for 3 years, or he will do his ministry for 3 years. And I'm believing that it's synchronous that 2012 will be that time. There are a lot of things that are going to happen in 2012. It's the culmination of time. For some reason, and many people don't realize this, but time we are enslaved by. Time, Chronos, or Saturn, is what our leaders follow. They are followers of the satanic, Saturnalian type of Babylonian magic. They follow it. That's why they are so obsessed with the hexagram, with Israel, with all that, because the hexagram, the six-pointed star, is a symbol of Saturn. Same with the what is known as the cross and sickle. That is also a symbol of Saturn. They hold those talismans dear. They hold the power of Saturn very close to them. If you want to know, Prince William and Kate Middleton were married exactly 30 years after Princess Diana and Prince William were married. 30 years is known as a Saturn return. So when he turns 30, he will be. It'll be the culmination number of Saturn, and it will empower him in 2012. 2012 is all based in time referencing. What they're going to do, and I get the feeling that 2012 will be a time where we are going to be told that time will have to change. We've had our Julian calendars, we've had our Gregorian calendars, and we are about to change the calendar yet again, and time is going to be changed. The reason why is because we're going to find that time will be irrelevant in a sense that with CERN creating the opening the doorways and dimensions, and with the idea that NASA now says that there is a time vortex over the planet, we are going to learn that a major event is going to change the way we look at time. 9/11, when that happened, that was our experience with how our time, what a major timepiece 9/11 or the Twin Towers were. The Twin Towers were a timepiece, and not many people know this. They were a timepiece that were patterned after Mecca. The World Trade Center was designed to be the United States Mecca, the Muslim Mecca, because what you have is you have two minarets and you have a golden stone that is in the middle, that is in the Fibonacci swirl of time. When that was destroyed and that ball was destroyed, it was what is known as a temporal destruction of the tower. And what you see in tarot cards is you see the temporal destruction of the tower. It represents the destruction of time and the rebuilding of the New Jerusalem. So they destroyed ours, and there are others that are going to be destroyed later. You notice that Mecca created a huge clock, and they said, we want to be able to own time now. We are the middle of the universe, not Israel, Mecca, not the United States, Mecca. They wanted Mecca to be that place where we were all gathering. So the Muslims are actually working hard to gain that hold on time. And what we do is we will do the same because we believe that Chronos, Saturn, the power of that God, is more powerful than Christ or the God that we worship, Jehovah, Elohim, whoever it might be. They find that Chronos and Saturn is far more powerful. Saturn is the satanic God. that ate his children, and that we actually pay homage to every New Year. The reason why we celebrate New Year's is because of the fact that it's a celebration that Kronos, Father Time, Death, did not behead us. That the sickle or the scythe moved over and we didn't get taken. That's why this whole Judgment Day thing is also a Saturnalian drill. People thought they were going to be raptured up or taken up into the sky. Well, the rapture, it argues, whether or not it is biblical, that maybe Margaret MacDonald created in the 1800s because of scriptural interpretation. But the whole idea of the counterfeit rapture is to be taken up into the arms of Baal, to be taken up into the arms of Baal during Beltane of the fiery times, which means that the earth will be burned and people who will not stand will be as a stubble. It is all part of the counterfeit and the reverse of Christianity. And so what we're seeing is this happening now, and people are being programmed into accepting it as real truth and real religion when it's really a corruption and a Saturnalian attempt to put the good king or Saturn on the throne.
Now let's go to this Saturnalian festival that you talk about in your book, and you're just mentioning here on air, Clyde. So this is a worship of the god Saturn, and they would have this day when they had the sexual orgies and all the eating and the drinking, the alcohol and so forth. And they call it the Saturnalia, the ancient Romans did. This appears to be the same day in a certain sort of way as the Jews' Purim, P-U-R-I-M, because they also have this festival. And what's quite interesting to me, now this sounds just absolutely horrible, but you've talked about in your book and a little bit here about that these people are almost cannibals.
Yes.
They have been known to literally eat, to sacrifice children to devils and, well, to eat of the flesh. Now, what is sort of horrible about this is that the Jews in the synagogues here in the United States and around the world at Purim, during their Purim festival, when they have all of the hoopla, in fact, it's the rabbis teach them that on this day, all men should be so drunk that they don't know the difference between what Haman and I think Mordecai. We get to the book of Esther, in the Bible, where all this nonsense comes out, which is really Estherian was the star goddess, but most people don't know that either. But now back to this, you quoted Prince Charles, who at the birth was there when Diana had the child William, and he was asked about what he thought about seeing the child, come out of the womb and all that. And he said he found the child most appetizing.
Yes, that's what he said.
That is so horrible. And yet it goes along with, by the way, Rabbi Arno Toaff, professor, a very famous professor, his father was the chief rabbi of the synagogue of Rome, said, in fact, that the ancient Jews did sacrifice and eat Gentile children, the blood.
Well, that was called blood libel, and a lot of people say that is a myth.
Yeah, but again, that's the book by Arno Toaff, who's one of a well-known Jewish professor who said it was absolutely true. Doesn't mean that they're doing it today.
That's the Golem of Prague. That's why the Golem of Prague was created, because they created it because of that story of the blood libel. What's really interesting is that around Christmas time, I did a story called Children Mass, and I was talking about that very thing, and it was several days later that Sarah Palin used the term blood libel. And I thought it was really kind of bizarre. And I was with Tracy Twyman when we did that show. We called it the Children Mass.
Hmm.
We talked about the sacrificing of children of the future with this whole situation with Barack Obama taking those trillions of dollars and borrowing against our children in the future, basically saying that, no children will be born because no one can afford them. And a lot of children will be sacrificed because no one can afford them, and that they will cull the population because we can't afford to live on this planet anymore. So the whole idea is about blood sacrifice. If you go back to what was said at the wedding, the royal wedding, it was read from Romans, the idea that we should sacrifice our bodies, that it's time that we put our bodies forward on the altar to be sacrificed. So the whole idea of sacrificing and blood sacrifice was the theme of Kate Middleton and Prince William in their wedding. And it's really creepy because not only that, but they have something called the Beltane cake, or the groom's cake that they served at the wedding. And it was interesting to note that it's a black cake, because what would happen is during the ceremonies of Baal and the ceremonies of Beltane, they would rub charcoal on the oat cake, and that oat cake would be eaten, and any anyone who found the charcoal, the burnt or the charcoal version of the cake and ate it, would be sacrificed to Baal. And so they had the same cake, was known as the black cake, and Prince William did not eat of the black cake. He had his own cake prepared for him. And he said he wanted it to be made with a secret recipe that included chocolate, tea biscuits, and something else that was not revealed, that would not be revealed to the public as to what he'd be eating.
Wow, that's it. And you have a picture. That cake is interesting. It's a three-layer cake, and they're really, squares.
Right.
And, towering up. And then it's on a round, like a golden circle, the circle of the sun, with its mirror. But the three layers of the chocolate or the dark cake, the groom's cake of Prince William, evidently though, that's the unholy trinity, isn't it, of the pagan mystery religions, what it represents, exactly. With the sun god being at the base of it.
Exactly.
Mm.
So that cake, it looked like it was, boxes. It was like boxes that are standing on each other. The white roses on the cake also are symbolic of Diana, which I find interesting as well, because they called her England's rose, just like they called Mary the rose, because the Rosicrucians and the Knights Templar thought that the Holy Grail was actually Mary carrying the blood of Jesus, carrying a baby of Jesus, and so when they called Diana England's rose, I also thought maybe she was carrying the counterfeit grail, which would be Prince William, which I thought, and I don't know if many people know this, but she tried to commit suicide because she said that she felt that she had the devil's baby in her stomach.
Wow.
She threw herself down the stairs to try and commit suicide to kill her and the baby because she felt as though that there was a devil inside of her.
Boy, that whole family, talk about dysfunctional. Now, Princess Diana, you quote her in your book as saying that William, her son, she called him just Wills, I think, can rebuild Camelot, and I will be his Merlin. William will remake the monarchy. Very interesting. She says she wants to be the Merlin. Of course, that would be the magician.
Right.
Who practices a magic.
It's the spirit world. Yes, wants to speak from the spirit world. Do you know why she called him Wills?
No.
Because she refused, because what Charles used to call him was the little I am. And,
well, that would be the literal meaning of will. I am the will of God.
Exactly. Hmm. And he would love to taunt Diana by calling him Will I Am, or the great I Am, meaning the great Jesus, because he saw him as the deliverer of the people, the great Arthur. He said to Diana that he wanted to name him Arthur, and Diana refused. So he named him William Philip Lewis Mountbatten Arthur. He named him that to give William the idea that he could use the name Arthur if he became king. And so what eventually happened was that Diana, I guess, said that he would establish Camelot on the earth, and that she wanted to be his Merlin or his magical familiar from the other side. And the marriage, if you look at it kind of in a necromantic sense, they were actually pushing and comparing Kate to Diana, and in literal fashion, he was marrying his mother from the grave.
Wow.
She was the proxy for his mother, and that they were bringing Diana back in that way.
You know, the very name Diana, though, brings us back to Diana, the great goddess who even the witches of today worship, the witchcraft goddess, Diana the Huntress,
yep,
of the forest and so forth, that was worshipped by the ancient Egyptians. The ancient Greeks.
Yeah, she's the moon goddess, and that's why when you see that script that says we see a woman clothed in the sun, which the sun, of course, is a representation of God, that she's clothed in the sun, but yet she has the moon at her feet. The moon at her feet, she is the dancing goddess Diana on the moon. She's the moon goddess.
You know, the Apostle moon goddess, Paul,
the moon child, the Antichrist, yeah, who raises up the dragon, raises and devours the child, Kronos, or the Saturnalian good king, devours the child, gives the child meaning, and tells him to rule in politics and in religion. And then he becomes the great king. And then he becomes the king that rules with an iron scepter and ushers in Armageddon.
By the way, I lost my train of thought a while ago when we were talking about, I guess it was such a grotesque subject, and unfortunately it is practiced by some occultists even to this day. But in Jewish synagogues at Purim, they bake little cookies, sort of like, gingerbread men. and they're in the form of you know, a man with the arms, the legs, and the head. And the Jewish children are encouraged to break off the pieces and to eat the pieces of the little man. And they call this the flesh of Haman, or Haman Tashin. And what a horrible thing that the Jewish kids are taught. They're eating the flesh of Haman, who, of course, as you know, in the book of Esther, is depicted as the great enemy of the Jewish people. And even to this day, the chief rabbis in Israel select a person somewhere in the world as their enemy of the year, and they call him Haman. And I understand that Saddam Hussein received that honor twice of being the Jews' Haman, or enemy of the year. Quite an interesting thing. You know,
well, it's the same ritual known as the cremation of care, which is based primarily on the Phoenician Molech sacrifice, where they would take a child and put it in the arms of a bull, and they would drop the child into the fire. And then for the longest time, they would give children dolls to put in the arms of Molech.
You're talking about the Bohemian Grove people.
Yeah.
Yeah, the world leaders who meet in California each year.
Yeah, exactly. And that's going to be happening pretty soon, actually, in the beginning of June.
Now, I want to return to one thing that I think is really interesting, Clyde, and that's this Jewish element, or Israel element. Many years ago, I received a real formal letter from some guy who claimed he was, I don't know, Grand Secretary, or the Grand Poobah, you might say, of the World British Israel Society. And he offered to come to America and instruct me on how the British royalty were the true Israel. He had all kind of materials and all of that to it, because I was not interested at all. Although, you know, I have studied some of those things, but evidently there is a real connection there. Even the Rothschilds. Is there an interbreeding of the bloodlines of the Rothschild and the other high-level, rich, wealthy Jews and the royal family and the nobility of Great Britain?
They would like to think that, but no, there is none.
Really?
In fact, if you were to take a look at the real bloodlines of the royalty, their bloodlines can be traced back to Cain, and that Tubal Cain. They can be traced back, and that's the big secret, Texas. The big secret is this: that many Jews are not Jews. That many royalty are not real royalty. There's no royal bloodline or anything going through them. They are literally descendants of Cain. They are literally descendants of the vampires, the descendants of the werewolves that we read about in Genesis, when Moses sent his armies to Cain, and they said that there were giants there that would eat their children. They are descendants of these groups. And it's really frightening, because you can also trace much of the bloodlines from the royalty to the Dracul, which are, of course, the Hun that existed in the time of Vlad Tepish, Count Dracula. They are literally the bloodline of the Hun, the vampire, and they are cannibals.
Now, during the king's coronation, and you point this out, there are elements that appear to be sort of like the, we go back to ancient Israel again, the anointing with oil of the king. And then tell us a little bit about the Stone of Scone.
The Stone of Scone is supposed to be the stone that was the pillow for Jacob when he looked up and he saw the angels climbing up the ladder to heaven, and they have transported it from Scotland to England to have a king sit on it. It's a coronation stone. And it's just all part of what I call the iconography that they exploit, that they say that they have in their possession and that they use to counterfeit Christianity. And counterfeit everything that it stands for.
So they claim they have the British royalty in their possession is Jacob's pillow.
Right.
So it would be this rock, just a normal rock, whatever, but of course it was maybe because his head lay on it, and he was given right. this great vision. But they really mix all this. I understand that isn't there some myth about Joseph of Arimathea leaving Israel and going to, the British Isles or something?
And he did it with Jesus, yes. And that's where that whole William Blake poem comes from. The States, will Jesus touch his feet again on the New Jerusalem, which is London? Will Britannia rise again as the New Rome? Will, you know, the whole idea. Something to point out, too, when you're talking about iconography, and I don't know, this wasn't in my book, and we're thinking about increasing the book to another volume. There was a guy by the name of, I think his name's back, who said that they would accept anyone, whether it be God or devil, to run the European Union. And one of the things that's interesting is that...
Oh, yeah, Henry Speck, yeah, okay.
...associated with the European Union is openly apocalyptic, and according to, you know about the mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots, the woman who writes the Great Beast. Well, you take a look at the euro coin, and it blatantly has engraved on it a woman riding a beast. And the EU Parliament, the European Parliament building, is a representation of the unfinished Tower of Babel. And in front of the building are sculptures of the harlot riding the horned beast again. The walls inside have tapestries of the harlot and the same image. In the Parliament itself, where they meet, there are 679 seats in an auditorium where the fifth Parliament meets there. And while these seats are allocated to every single representative and member, one seat remains empty, and that is the seat, which is 666.
So even though they're a secular government, the European Parliament, there's evidently a belief or a fear of the number 666, so they leave that seat vacant.
Well, no, they openly claim it's set aside for the Antichrist.
Wow, well, goodness. Well, Clyde, I'll tell you, we're about to run out of time here. Could you tell people how to get more information or how to order the book, Antichrist 2012?
Yeah, go to LibertyCapPress.com. That's LibertyCapPress.com, or they can order the book. If you have a hard time finding out Liberty Cap Press, you can go to GroundZeroMedia.org. GroundZeroMedia.org, go there, and you can click on the link that takes you to Liberty Cap Press to purchase the book. It's a PDF. We're trying to get it in print. We're thinking about expanding it for print, but we wanted to give people a taste of it because we wanted it to come out during the royal wedding to prepare people for the beginning of the anointing of the great king of the world, Mr. Prince William, who may be King Arthur. We will wait and see what happens with that, but in the meantime, the book is full of all kinds of information and background and all kinds of dot connecting, which are amazing. And I'd say it's comparable to what Tex Mars writes. So if you want to read some really good prophecy, read Tex's books. But this book is right up there on par with his, I believe. So.
Yeah, you know, I wrote a book, Mysterious Monuments, and this is sort of totally different, of course, but along the same lines about the mystery religions and architecture and iconography that you call it and so forth. Now that's Liberty Cap. That's like the cap you wear. Liberty Cap. Come again, the rest.
LibertyCapPress.com.
Press, that's CREST?
Liberty Cap Press, PRES.
Oh, Press. I'm sorry. LibertyCapPress.com or GroundZeroMedia.org. Now, you have a radio program of your own every day. How can folks listen to your radio program?
You can listen to me on KXL.com. I'm on from 9 Pacific time until midnight Pacific time. The show deals with all kinds of things, anything from mystery religions to conspiracy theories to alien contact, that sort of thing. Recently, I did a show where I was talking about how Barack Obama had signed in Westminster Abbey a date, which was 24th of May 2008 instead of 24th of May 2011. We did some examining. We found out that on the day of May 24, 2008, there were tornadoes that ravaged Oklahoma, that people were paying money to help the earthquake victims of Sichuan, China, that there was a royal wedding in Denmark. So we're looking at a parallel time frame where Obama accidentally wrote that date, but that date has a lot of significance when you consider the events that took place on that date.
Well, really, really interesting.
It'll be happening the same thing now. So,
well, Clyde, I want to thank you for being our guest today on Power of Prophecy. I hope I can have you again.
I'd love to come on.
Okay, my friend. God bless you. Folks, this is Tex Mars. You've been listening to Power of Prophecy. My guest has been Clyde Lewis. Had a great time talking about some biblical things and maybe what's to come. I'm praying that you'll tune in each week during this same time and discover the power of prophecy.